everybody, and welcome to episode 41 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always joined by a man who once admitted to eating 3 Krispy Kreme donuts in a day. Brian, how the hell are you today?
Still digesting those Krispy Kreme donuts.
I bet you are, my friend.
Well, it was yesterday. Everybody was concerned about the weather, so one of the office employees decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something nice. I'm going to pick up a dozen donuts for the office, not realizing that so many people had called out due to the weather that there really was a lot of donuts left over as the day transpired. So I had my first donut during the acceptable 9 to 10 o'clock window.
Sure.
Followed up by I would say it was probably about a 3 o'clock donut.
Nice.
Just to, you know, the energy level was starting to lower.
You need that sugar rush to get through the end of the day.
Absolutely. And then that was followed by the no shame in the game 4:45 donut, because hey, it's a shame to throw it out.
So were these filled donuts? Were these just the traditional Krispy Kremes? Were they frosted?
The first one, standard glazed donut.
All right.
You cannot go wrong with just a plain Krispy Kreme glazed donut. Second one was filled not with a custard, but more of a what's the word I'm thinking of?
Fruit, perhaps?
No. It wasn't like a jelly donut, but it was more like a marshmallowy kind of fluff.
So like a fluff filling. I know which one you're talking about.
And then the last was just a Boston cream.
That's my favorite.
But it was also 4 o'clock when I had it, so it was several hours old. Did not have that nice spongy texture that you look for in a donut. However, I will say the sugar count was just as high eating the third donut as the first. My stomach was not appreciating it. And let's be honest. If I have no self-control when it comes to eating food in front of me.
Well, I can't blame you. Like, especially if those are hot off of the whatever they call that thing there, the assembly line, I could easily put down like half a dozen just right there.
Now, the question is that you can put it down, but what is your stomach like after you take the last bite?
Oh, it hates me. I mean, it's painful. It's full of dough because they feel very light because they're so warm and soft. Mm-hmm. But once you get like 3 or 6 in your belly, like the yeast just really kicks in from the extra heat and you're not happy with yourself.
I like the way you just jumped from 3 to 6. You're like, because when you have 3 or 6.
I mean, once you get to 3, you might as well just go to 6. It's like eating half a pizza. At that point, you might as well just finish the other half.
Listen, you are not going to win any awards for leftovers. Yeah. That's the way I approach it.
Listen, also, there are kids in foreign countries that would love that half a pizza.
I don't know what that half a pizza would do to them when you really think about it.
Exactly. Their body can't process it like us Americans can process crap.
Absolutely. That's why we're number one.
Regardless, speaking of processing crap, we're processing another Bring Your Own Drink of the Week this week. Brian, what are you partaking of?
I'm going with a fine Scotch whiskey that's produced by the Macallan Distillery. Going
Makes
with the
sense.
12, the 12-year-old.
That's
12-year-old, yes. It's my go-to,
So I'm sticking with beer again because that's usually my drink of choice.
Do you like beer?
I like beer. Do you like beer?
You like beer?
I like beer.
I liked beer.
So I'm going with a Young's Double Chocolate Stout. And why?
I liked beer.
Exactly. I like beer. So a little sip, a little top of the morning to you, or top of the evening, depending on when you're listening.
Very nice. So you're going right out of the bottle. Now, my question to you is,
yes,
when do you go from when do you move to the pint glass?
You know, it really depends. I was feeling a little lazy tonight, so I just really grabbed this and brought it into the recording studio.
Okay.
But, you know, you probably should, with a nice stout, pour it out into a pint glass. It's actually a little cold for a stout, so I should have let it warm up a bit.
Now, this is where I'm going to say you know a lot more about beer. About beer. I think you know a lot more about beer than I do, because my question to you is, how do you know the temperature that you're supposed to be drinking that beer at? And also, What makes you say that you're supposed to be drinking that type of beer out of a glass as opposed to the bottle?
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question.
Sorry. You know, I've read there's varying schools of thoughts, but stouts typically aren't this cold from what I've typically drank them at. Plus, okay. Also, the beer fridge is in the basement, which is very cold due to the weather, so it's right. Even colder than normal. And as far as glasses, you know, you want to let the beer breathe a little bit, like a fine wine.
Now, is that specific to stouts, or is that any type of beer you want to let breathe?
I have no idea. I'm really just talking out of my ass right now.
Because I'm going to tell you something. I find a Yingling lager great right out of the bottle.
True. I think you'll find your lagers are fine right out of a bottle, but okay. I think, you know, depending on, you know, because with your IPAs and other things, you want to get a little bit of the nose, because your nose is just as important as the tongue.
It's one of the five senses. You know, there's no way that you can say one is more important or more valuable than the next.
You eat with your eyes as well as your mouth, Brian.
Well, it depends, because one of the things I like to do specifically on Tuesday and Thursday nights is I like to blindfold myself while sitting down and eating, preferably something messy such as tacos or a plate of spaghetti. And once you've stripped yourself of the ability to see your food, I mean, it's a little messier, don't get me wrong. The taste buds really just kick in and they take over. Unfortunately, in the past, I've had some bad experiences where I unfortunately grabbed the cottage cheese out of my refrigerator and instead of the leftover Chinese food, so I heated it up in the pan, burned my hand a few times. It didn't go over very well.
So you kind of do the Bird Box challenge over your dinner, is what you're saying.
I was doing it before Bird Box.
It was cool.
I'm not one to fall into the internet challenges. That's why I found the Bird Box movie to be such trash, because I had full understanding that this was not something that as a society we wanted to encourage.
All right. Can I just say, God damn, I forgot how good this double chocolate stout from Young's is.
So what you're saying, and let me know if I hear you correctly, what you're saying is that you like beer.
I mean, I like beer, and I like this particular beer.
I liked beer.
So okay. That's all I'm all saying. Right. It will always haunt you for our ASMR folks out there.
I will never forgive you that one episode where you just played it for a really long period of time.
And it wasn't as long as you think it was, but it sure as hell seemed long.
Absolutely. It's the presidential version of fingernails across a blackboard.
All right. We got a ton of topics on the list to cover tonight.
What do we got?
Let's get it rolling with This Week in Racism.
This week in
Racism.
In another hotly contested matchup, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam just edged by defending champ Mark Allen Bartlett 57% to 43%. Bartlett goes to the bench as a one-time winner. Governor Ralph Northam will now be looking for his second win this upcoming week. Plenty of racism, unfortunately, yet again to consider this week. In the fashion world, we had a couple of instances with Gucci and Katy Perry facing protests this week over articles of clothing that resembled blackface. Gucci was selling a sweater that pulled up over the wearer's mouth, while Perry had a pair of black shoes with a face on them. They were ridiculously racist. I sent you the photos, didn't I, Brian?
Yep.
Ridiculously racist looking. Going out to Papillion, or Papillon, perhaps, Nebraska, we have police there detained a black teenager shoveling snow while they were looking for another suspect in the neighborhood. Going across the pond to the UK, Coventry University, their dodgeball team was suspended after members were photographed in a nightclub wearing t-shirts that had swastikas and anti-Semitic messages written on them. Going out near you, Brian, in Long Island, Roosevelt Middle School, teachers displayed a photo collage that included two nooses that were labeled as back-to-school necklaces. Mm. Going down to Florida, because we always have to go to Florida each week, it seems, in Broward County. Body cam video surfaced this week about a July 2017 incident where a sheriff's deputy was filmed calling a black man boy and grabbing him by the throat. But our undisputed worst person to go up against the governor this week, also from Florida in the Miami area, is Julie Edwards. She was stopped by a Volusia County sheriff while backing out of her driveway. The sheriff was responding to a complaint of a disturbance at her residence and found her slurring her words and smelling of alcohol. While in his patrol car, she made numerous threatening comments that the KKK was going to come after him and his family.
I won't find you. Somebody else will.
You making a threat to a law enforcement officer?
No, I didn't say that.
So what do you mean by you'll find me one day?
I didn't say I'll find me you, in the corner. I'll say somebody else will. Oh. I won't find you. My KKK people will.
Alright, thank you for the threat. I'll add that charge.
I didn't say it about you. I said they know people like you. I didn't say you. Hey, ain't a damn thing wrong with a burning cross in your yard, is there? You f***ed with the wrong white people. You f***ed up. Hope you don't have no kids. You know what's gonna happen here now? You don't wanna know. You're done. You're f***. They're gonna hurt you bad. Bad. You don't f*** with little white girls. Not like you do. Your eyes would be poked out, you know. You sat here and laughed at me.
I wasn't laughing at all.
God.
Bravo 25.
You got a nigger and a white nigger.
Bravo 25.
We transporting. My 10-15 to the branch, you know, starting same attending.
KKK's got your ass, boy!
At 128.
Burn your ass. Support. Send you all you back. Burn the rest of you. You're gonna look like a dumbass! So do they have special incentives to hire
So, Julie, while it was edited from the version that was sent out by the sheriff's office, dropped the N-word repeatedly, threatened the guy's family. To his credit, he kept his cool the entire time, but Julie, definitely a horrible person, definitely deserving of this week in racism. She will be going up against Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
I'm going to say this, if you're asking me for my analysis this week, I think that Julie
Julie okay, Edwards.
I think Julie's going to be hurt this week, and I'll tell you why.
All right.
Because I think that the editing of the video, the lack of the audible N-words that she was spewing has somehow caused her to come across like a more subtle racist. Whereas I think Governor Ralph Northam, who has decided that despite his long belief that putting shoe polish on his face and doing a Michael Jackson moon dance for a school dance competition is not enough for him to resign as governor of one of the 50 U.S. states. But the fact that he has decided he is going to go on a statewide listening tour where he's going to go in front of his constituents in the great state of Virginia, no racists there, and he's going to listen to them and listen to their experiences, and somehow that's going to help convey the idea that he's not a racist. I think Northam's going to have another easy week, and I think Julie had potential to be a great candidate, but she's hurt by the poor audio quality.
Well, we will see. Obviously, it's up to you, the listener, to let us know. So go to the Facebook page. The poll will be up there, and you can vote for this week's winner in This Week in Racism. Rolling on to our Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
So So if I can start, Brian, if you don't mind, this week. My beef this week is with slim fit clothing. Now, you know me, Brian. I'm a dapper individual, a well-dressed man. I like to present myself in the best way I can, whether professionally or personally.
Of course. And
it really just bugs the living hell out of me when I go to a shop, I find something into my size. I'm a bigger man. I'm a man of girth. I'll admit it. Find a nice shirt in my
size.
Well,
from the waist down. Let's speak truth.
And all of a sudden, it's a slim fit shirt. So there's no way in hell that I'm going to fit into that shirt. So I understand that there's thin people out there, and maybe in those smaller sizes, sure, do the slim fit. But if you've got a 40-inch waist, there's nothing on you that's slim. You don't need slim fit pants. If you've got, let's say, a 17.5, 18-inch neck, chances are the rest of your top isn't that slim anyway. So just stop ruining my day by having me see these great clothes that I will not fit in until years after I have died. That's my beef. What do you got?
Okay. I'm going to go with employees who will seize upon any potential weather event as a reason not to come to work.
I think I'm with you on this one.
And Lord knows I am not Mr. Company. I am not Mr. Management. I'm cut from the cloth of the working man. When I read Lenin's work, I identify with the people. I'm not the proletariat, or maybe I am the proletariat, because I don't know what the proletariat is. Was it the working man, or was it the ruling class? Don't tell me.
I won't.
I'd rather live in ignorance. However, those of us in the Northeast had what was potentially a snow / wintry mix / freezing rain event yesterday that came through the Northeast. And on Monday, I was hit by several employees, not only people I work with in my office, but people who work in other offices within the company I work for, asking me what our work from home policy was, because it was going to be very bad the next day. So these are people that are already preparing to not have to come into work. Lo and behold, once again, at least from what I could tell, we did not get the wintry blizzard that was predicted, or worst case scenarioed, by the meteorologists. And once again, yesterday, I am hit with employees who are coming in late, who are immediately walking around doing nothing but looking out windows, reading aloud weather reports, and putting forth the case that they need to leave early so that they can be home. And as you look out the window, all you see is rain coming down. Don't get me wrong, it was gross out yesterday. Gross, but not, I don't want to be outside and at work levels.
Right. And, you know, for where I work, you know, I started getting the texts, you know, Monday night around 9 o'clock, like, oh, they're starting to do 2-hour delays for schools. Maybe we shouldn't come in till like 10 or 11. It's like, well, let's wait and see what happens. At the end of the day, we got like an inch of snow. And it was like nobody was on the roads because, like you said, I think in most companies, people were just even bother going into work. So I'm with you. I think we both come from that same old school where, you know, you got a foot of snow on the ground. You're going to go to school. You're going to go to work.
Yeah.
You're just going to be there.
You have responsibilities. Live up to them. Stop looking for a reason to not have to live up to those responsibilities. Or have the comfort of just saying I'm taking tomorrow off, because I don't feel like dealing with the weather. But they don't want to use their paid time off. They don't want to use vacation time. They want to sit there and just have the company say, you know what, don't come into work, but I want you to get paid. And it just rubs me the wrong way.
All right. I'm with you on that one. 100% this week, my friend.
Oh, can I throw in a bone-eye beef of the week?
Please.
I'll have forgotten it by next week. But while we're on the subject, here's another one. People that come into work on Friday and say, thank God it's Friday, or variations of it, like, woo, we survived another week.
Well, we made it was a close one. We made it just through in the nick of time.
does that irritates me to no end. It's like you're basically advertising how much you hate going to work.
Which we all do, but we just don't have to openly advertise it all the time.
But you know what? If you hate going to work, you're working in the wrong place. If you're going to sit there and say that you are spending 5 days of misery for 2 days of happiness, then look for something else. And I don't mean that in an uncaring way, you know. And I can understand certain people don't have the luxury to switch jobs and they're just happy to have the one they have. But it's just the fact of, if you're in the office, at least play the games. Just be smarter about it.
Just pretend you want to be there.
Yes, pretend it. At least just sell that point. Don't sell the fact of, I was so miserable today, but the only thing that's keeping me breathing is the fact that I don't have to come into this shit show tomorrow. I'm done with it. I'm done with letting that slide.
All right. That's a good bonus beef. You're on fire with the beef this week, my friend.
All right, here's another one. Here's another one.
The trifecta of beef.
Okay. When your podcast host suddenly decides out of nowhere to just literally wipe clean all the episodes that you've uploaded, despite the fact that you've paid them your monthly fees and actually upgraded at one point because you realized that the volume of the downloads was warranting a higher level of service, log on to their website and all your episodes are missing.
It was a little concerning today.
How do you find that out, if I may ask? Do you look at it? I tend to check the
site every now and then just to make sure, you know, just as a quality control, because I'm anal retentive like that. And it pulled up nothing. It pulled up the site, but it didn't pull up any episodes. So I was like, well, this doesn't seem right. So. But to their credit, they did fix it relatively quickly after we opened up the ticket. But even still, you pay for a service, you want to get the service.
Absolutely. I demand the service.
You demand satisfaction.
Damn right.
Well, we've already talked a little bit about Virginia with Governor Ralph Northam. You know, it's been, I don't want to say it was necessarily a quiet week in Virginia, but nothing, there was no real movement. Governor Northam had an interview with Gayle King this week where he came under more fire by making this statement.
Well, it has been a difficult week. And you know, if you look at Virginia's history, we're now at the 400-year anniversary, just 90 miles from here in 1619, the first indentured servants from Africa landed on our shores in Old Point Comfort, what we call now Fort Monroe, and while
also known as slavery.
Yes.
Yeah. So while most historians would say that he is technically correct by using the term indentured servant, it did come across as him trying to kind of not necessarily
rewrite history,
have to use the word slavery. So
yeah.
So perhaps maybe during his listening tour, he can understand why he's maybe a little bit tone deaf. But one thing that did happen this past week is further discussions regarding the appropriateness or inappropriateness of blackface, specifically in comedy and entertainment. The New York Post wrote an op-ed piece because on last week's Saturday Night Live, they did a bit about Virginia and all of the people in politics that are having issues with blackface. And the New York Post pointed out, if you look at the history of Saturday Night Live, they have a history of white comedians doing characters in blackface. Billy Crystal did Sammy Davis Jr. Jimmy Fallon did Chris Rock. Daryl Hammond did the Reverend Jesse Jackson. Fred Armisen did Barack Obama. And all doing them in makeup, in blackface. So the New York Post's point was that is somewhat hypocritical for Saturday Night Live to be taking shots at Virginia when they have that in their past. And then also, Nick Cannon called out Jimmy Kimmel, Sarah Silverman, and I forget who the third one was, that had also done some blackface characters in their career as well.
Mm-hmm.
So your thoughts on the blackface in the comedy world and whether it's appropriate, Brian?
I think we are going through a period of time where, and there's a definite sense of fluidity in terms of social norms, what's acceptable, what's not. They're definitely shifting. It's not a constant line. It's not in a definite direction. But I think that we are looking at behaviors that are not acceptable today. We are looking back on people who have participated in these types of behaviors, and that we are holding them accountable, you know, despite the fact that at the time there was not the same perception that these were unacceptable acts. I think that, you know, the Saturday Night Live and the Hollywood celebrities, I think what's interesting about that attack is that these are institutions, Hollywood, Saturday Night Live, have really been well known for their liberal approach, their open-mindedness, their anti-racism. And yet when you look at it, just as guilty in certain areas.
Exactly.
You know, maybe because you're doing it with a laugh intended at the end of that moment, you somehow think that the offense is not as strong, but I don't know that I necessarily agree with that.
That you agree with the Post or with Saturday Night Live?
Saturday Night Live. I tend to agree with the Post. I think you've got the Hollywood elite, and you know how I feel about the Hollywood elite. I've been at war with them for years, but you've got the Hollywood elite that have no problem going after the fine governor of Virginia, Ralph Cramden, and they want to go after him, and they want to say that he needs to step down immediately. But then when you hold the mirror up and you say, well, you guys did this yourself. I mean, where would we be if C. Thomas Howell hadn't done Soul Man?
You know who's really escaped the whole blackface situation?
Snoop Dogg?
Robert Downey Jr.
Oh. Yeah, but that was like an inside joke. Because it was quite obvious that he was playing a naive character.
I think it just, you know, I've often told you.
It was a little
everybody,
meta. It
everybody
was a
loves
little
Robert
meta
Downey
run.
Jr.
Yeah, well, not you know who doesn't love him?
Who's that?
His neighbor who found him asleep in her son's bed.
That was years ago.
So she's forgiven. She gets the pass. But today we all just love him.
That's right. I mean, you got to love the Avengers movies.
I don't.
I don't
not
know
my
that.
Thing.
I don't know that we can be not friends anymore.
Okay. I'm not trying to hijack the show, but please explain to me, what is the appeal of the Avengers movies?
I just enjoy them. You know, I did like comic books as a kid, but again, I just feel like they're for the most part very well done. A nice mix of humor and suspense. I think they've done some good casting in some of the different things. Very excited about Captain Marvel coming out next month, and looking forward to Avengers Endgame. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I'm a sucker for a good Marvel movie.
Now, if I may review the same concept, because I did see the last Avengers movie.
You saw Infinity War?
Yeah, the one with Thanos where everybody dies at the end.
Oh, not everybody, just half.
Okay. It felt like it was a 4 minutes of plot and then an hour and 45 action scene.
See, the problem, Brian, with Infinity War, you missed the 32 movies that led up to it.
What does that mean?
That means every Marvel movie is tied up in some way, shape, or form. So you missed, 136 hours of backstory.
So what you're saying to me, and let me know if I hear you correctly on this.
All right.
What I hear you saying is that it's okay that this movie was nothing but a hour and 45 minute fight scene because all the backstory was taking place in other movies.
I mean, you know, if you didn't see Captain America, Captain America Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War, Ant-Man and the Wasp, what else? Iron Man 1 through 3, Black Panther. You just don't get it, man.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Spider-Man, Homecoming.
I'll be honest with you. I find the DC universe way more interesting than Marvel.
Wow. And here I thought I knew you after all these years. After all these years, I thought I fucking knew you, man. All right.
Ron, if you think I have any idea who is in DC versus Marvel, I do not have a fucking clue.
Because that's some fighting words right there.
I will say this. I know that this is actually what my knowledge base is. I know that Superman and Batman are DC.
Right.
I know that Captain America, Thor, Iron Man is Marvel.
All right.
If we want to do a quiz where you give me characters and I guess whether they're Marvel or DC, I'm up for it. But I'm going to tell you something. I don't expect to perform well during that exam.
Maybe we'll all prepare that. You know what we should do is you and I will have to watch a Marvel film of my choosing, and you'll have to live tweet your thoughts.
I'm happy to do it.
I think that's our next live tweet event.
Where we just pick like a Tuesday night where Brian watches a movie and live tweets it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Let's make that happen. Anyway, we got
to tell you something. I thought the live tweet of the Super Bowl was a great. I think we should be doing more of those.
Yeah. So we'll do it with one of the Marvel movies. If any of our listeners out there would like to suggest a Marvel movie they want us to live tweet, please do on the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram. We got way off topic from Virginia because we didn't even get back into Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, now up to two accusers of sexual assault. The first woman had come out, I think, within the first week of the blackface incident happening. That was, I'm forgetting her name, Vanessa Tyson, who is apparently now meeting with the district attorney's office in Boston to give her statement, because there will be an investigation about that. There was a second woman, Meredith Watson, who attended Duke University with Justin Fairfax and is also claiming that he raped her as well. Did you see Meredith's story at all?
No.
So this, again, if, you know, the investigation has to happen, we assume innocent until guilty, yada, yada, yada.
Of course.
If her story is true, it's as bad as sexual assault is, like, this story becomes even worse because, you know, before the Justin Fairfax incident, Meredith Watson filed a complaint with Duke University. She stated she had been raped by a Duke basketball player, Corey Maggett, and nothing ever happened with that rape investigation. So
I have a question for you,
okay.
If I can interrupt.
You may.
And I certainly don't mean to hijack this episode, but this is one thing I saw this in the news. Now, is that a... You know, the fact that that's being reported, is that a way to sit for the detractors of hers, the supporters of Fairfax, to kind of say, here's a woman that that goes around claiming that she's been raped by famous people?
Well, we'll get to that in a second, because I have there is something else I want to mention in that
perfect,
I agree with you, and there's even more to it than that.
Good, because I genuinely don't know. Yeah.
So anyway. She accuses Corey Maggett. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he's a Duke basketball player. Duke investigates it, does nothing. Nothing happens. You know, she has obviously told her friends, her circle of friends, of who Justin Fairfax is, one of those individuals. And you know, as she tells the story in stating what happens with Justin Fairfax, is once he knew that it happened to her, he focused in on her and he raped her for the fact that she had already gone to the university and nothing had happened. So he felt comfortable that if he had raped her, if she went back to the university, nothing would happen again. And that's specifically why he targeted her.
Oh, now this happened while he was a student?
Yes.
Oh, God, I hope that's not true, because that is awful behavior.
But to your point... Yes, I mean, it's, you know, and I don't think it's, I don't think it's any coincidence that we find that Fairfax retained the same law firm that Judge Kavanaugh did during his situation with being accused of sexual assault. And now we're seeing these other stories leaked to the press. First, we have this situation with this first incident of rape at Duke University that she has reported. And now it came out that, for whatever reason, the story came out that she was the subject of a restraining order back in 2008. I guess an ex-boyfriend of hers filed what they call a peace order against her in July 2008. However, you know, her lawyer's stating she never went to defend herself. Like, there was, apparently, he owed her money. She wanted her money. Owed her like $2,000, and so there was fighting involved because of that, and then he files this peace order against her. So again, you have to question why something like that is relevant to her accusations against these two men, and right. how it just conveniently these little things start to come out in the press about these accusers every single time. You know, rather than look at the behavior of the men being accused, the women, again, are subjected to having their past put under a spotlight and every, you know, possible thing. I mean, could she have possibly done something to justify a restraining order from this boyfriend? Sure. Does that negate the possibility of her having been raped once or twice? It does not. But you can certainly see why people are trying to put these articles in the press to try and obfuscate the situation at hand. And it's a little bit disgusting. So I'm on the same page with you there.
What I thought was also bad was the fact that they, while Fairfax was meeting with the press, they sat there and started quizzing him when he was in college about some of the college parties he had attended. And he took out his calendar that he had maintained from the years that he went to college.
Of course.
And he had gone to certain parties, and they ultimately asked him whether whether he enjoyed beet juice, whether he had drank vodka while in college. And finally, they said to him, "Hey, Lieutenant Governor Fairfax, what is your approach to drinking beer?"
"I liked beer."
And he literally, I mean, and that's when you know that it's really the powers that be that are really using the people as puppets now.
It's definitely the same playbook Fairfax is using that Kavanaugh used. So we will continue to monitor this. I mean, at this point, you know, there's not a lot that can be technically done against the governor of Virginia because he didn't break any laws. There was talk of there being impeachment proceedings brought against Fairfax. That's since been put aside while these investigations run their course. And then the Secretary of State, who also admitted to wearing blackface at one point, he's just laying low. Like, he has not been in the news at all the past week.
And right.
I would anticipate he's like their failsafe, where if Northam and Fairfax goes down, hopefully the Democrats are hoping they can retain the governor's seat by keeping the Secretary of State in power. Because otherwise it goes to the Republicans at that point. Anything else in Virginia, or are we just going to keep an eye on that moving forward?
I think that it's one of those stews where every mouthful that you take gets worse than the one before. And I think that it's amazing how quickly when one domino falls, the next one looks just as rotten as the one before. I'm trying to throw as many analogies and similes in there as possible.
I was wondering where you were going with this. All right, so I'm just going to cut you off there, if you don't mind, and we'll move on. There was much to do this week about Representative Ilhan Omar, about her comments regarding AIPAC, which is a pro-Israel lobbying firm. I'm sure you saw it. Now, Brian, as our senior Jewish correspondent, what is your take on the situation?
Well, I think, speaking for my people, I would have to say that it is standard operating protocol in American politics to never say anything negative about the country of Israel or the Jewish people as a whole, that it is something that is off the table, out of the book, that there's nothing you can say negative. You cannot question anything about them. It's just a taboo subject.
And, you know, to be fair, I mean, maybe she didn't word it in the best way possible, but, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, that's what lobbying firms do, is they fund politicians to get legislation that is, you know, proactive to whatever their cause is passed. And that was her point. You know, again, maybe it wasn't said in the best way, shape, or form, but, you know, she did come out, she apologized for her words, but did not apologize for the meaning, which is, again, there's way too much lobbying involved in politics these days.
I think that if we were to look at the Palestinian-Israel situation that has been going on for far too long, and you look at it from the Palestinian perspective, I think there's a lot of valid, and I'm watching how I say it because the Jewish Podcasting Federation is very strong, and I certainly do not want them going after our after our web host to have us shut down or to go after our podcasting host. But so I'm watching my words very carefully. But if I were to look at this situation from the Palestinian perspective, I think I would raise my hand and say, I think there's a lot going on that is rotten, and I want to speak about it. And while I think she may have chosen her words poorly, do you have what she actually said in front of you?
I do not.
I'm going to ramble for a little bit while you look it up. But I think but what was surprising to me is the fact that we are very much in this mindset now, especially in the Democratic-controlled, progressive-driven House of Representatives right now, where it almost, you know, we're trying to sell it as a new page in a book has been turned. You know, the rules that were in place last year are not there now, and for the first time, we do have a Palestinian. And not necessarily she is representing Palestine, but she is, you know, from a cultural and a national perspective, she is from Palestine, and she is a member. She was elected to be a member of the House of Representatives, and she stands up and speaks for her people and speaks against the people that have been. I don't even know what word I'm going to use for. I want to say holding her people down, but that sounds like. Edward G. Robinson at this point, and I don't want to make any more 1940s references. I only do it twice per episode. But it's just the idea that when she spoke up and she let her views be known, it was attacked by everybody on the right and the left. Immediately there were these fervent calls for an apology from the Democrats themselves, the people who are most sitting there saying we need to embrace new perspectives on the status quo. You know, it wasn't even, hey, listen, you know, she chose her words poorly, but, you know, maybe we do need to talk about this. Maybe the Palestinian vote does, you know, perspective does have some, you know, maybe there is some validity to what they have to say.
And really, all that she had said in her tweet was, you know, in talking about, you know, American support for Israel, you know, is that it was all about the Benjamins, baby. So, of course, everyone just ties in as like, oh, because it's Jews, it's all about the money. And so, you know, I think
hold
it
on
was
a second.
I think it no, was kind of skewed the way that people turned it.
You're not looking at it from the Jewish perspective.
Sorry. Because, well, that's why I defer to you, our senior Jewish correspondent.
See, and this was the reference. See, Benjamins, what you think Benjamins, because you grew up listening to Puff Daddy, Bad Boy hip hop, that you think Benjamins is a reference to $100 bills. What you're not realizing is that Benjamins is actually a reference to Benjamin Hofstadler, who was a famed guard in Auschwitz and was personally held accountable for killing over 4,000 Jews during the Holocaust.
Well, I'm going to jot that down.
It's all about the Benjamins.
I might have to fact check you on that.
Check out his Wikipedia as I feverishly create one right now. Yes.
And of course, you know, Donald Trump and the Republicans can't miss a chance to be hypocritical. So, you know, President Trump is now encouraging Omar to resign from her statement. But again, he's obviously said much worse. Jake Tapper did have a great piece that he aired tonight on Trump's involvement in this situation that we'd like to play for you here.
Bigotry recently. Minnesota Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar this week was accused by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other top Democrats of spreading, quote, anti-Semitic tropes. Omar has apologized, but our own Manu Raju found her quite unwilling to discuss the controversy when he asked her about it today.
The president trafficked in hate.
What's wrong with you?
Well, I'm asking you a question about your tweet. You had a tweet saying the president trafficked in hate.
I tweeted. There's a response. You can run that. Have a nice day.
Omar's apology that she referred to there was not good enough for President Trump.
Anti-Semitism has no place in the United States Congress. What she said is so deep-seated in her heart that her lame apology, and that's what it was lame, and she didn't mean a word of it, was just not appropriate. I think she should resign from Congress, frankly. But at a minimum, she shouldn't be on committees.
An amen came from Vice President Pence, who tweeted, quote, to those who engage in anti-Semitic tropes should not just be denounced. They should face consequences for their words, unquote. Congresswoman Omar specifically suggested that financial donations from American Jews are what fuel support for Israel. She tweeted, quote, it's all about the Benjamins, baby. And when asked to whom she was referring, she tweeted, AIPAC, the pro-Israel lobbying organization, because there is nothing that this White House finds more offensive than a politician feeding into stereotypes about Jews and Jewish money and controlling politicians, which is what Congresswoman Omar is accused of having done.
Is there anybody that doesn't renegotiate deals in this room? This room negotiates. I want to renegotiate this room. Perhaps more than any room I've ever spoken to. Maybe not. It's okay. I've been called on that a couple of times, too. You're not going to support me, even though you know I'm the best thing that could ever happen to Israel. And I'll be that. And I know why you're not going to support me. And, you know, you're not going to support me because I don't want your money. You don't want to give me money, okay? But that's okay. You want to control your own politician. That's fine.
I'm sorry. That was the wrong clip. That was then-candidate Trump in front of the Republican Jewish Coalition, suggesting that haggling Jews like to control their politicians with their money. We wanted the clip of Congresswoman Omar. Control room, I want the Omar clip. Give us the Omar clip. There it, wait, no, that's not it either. That's a deleted Donald Trump retweet from 2016, as conservative Eric Erickson tweeted at the time, quote, a Star of David, a pile of cash, and suggestions of corruption. Donald Trump again plays to the white supremacists, unquote. Control room, I'm not looking for stuff about Trump. I'm looking for the Congresswoman Omar clip. Do you have it? Okay, I'm being told we have it. Thank you. Run it, please.
Excuse me. To protest. Excuse me. They didn't put themselves down as you. And you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
No, control room. That was President Trump saying that very fine people were marching alongside neo-Nazis and skinheads and white supremacists, people who had chanted Jews will not. Yes, those people, the anti-Semites in Charlottesville. And my sincerest apologies. Can we please forget about President Trump for a second? Can we show the Omar tweet? Please, the Omar tweet. Can you show it, please? Oh, that's not, this isn't it either. This is unbelievable. This is a tweet by House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy right before the midterm saying, quote, we cannot allow Soros, Steyer, and Bloomberg to buy, in all caps, this election. Of course, that's an allegation by the House Republican leader that three wealthy liberals, all of whom happen to be of Jewish descent, were trying to buy the election. Guys, I'm not talking about that either. Okay, I'm sorry. We're going to take a quick break. We seem to have some issues here sorting out which anti-Semitic tropes are offensive and which ones are not. We'll be right back as we sort.
So a little bit of theatrics by Jake there, but the point was kind of driven home. I don't know that there's anybody on the right or in the Republican Party that really has firm ground to stand upon when criticizing a potentially anti-Semitic comment by somebody on the left.
Yeah, but I think the whole point here is just the fact that the is that Trump has been very vocal about certain things, but he's not held accountable to them. Nobody's really going after him. I grew up during the world of John Gotti, and he was known as the Teflon Don, where Trump literally has been the Teflon politician, where he says outlandish things that are clearly lies, and it's just it's just Donnie being Donnie. At least he's not cheating on his wife and marrying Eastern European hookers. But that's, what am I supposed to say?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure. But on the good thing is that Representative Omar, she's kind of dug in her heels. She's apologized. She's standing firm. Really went at who was that guy she was questioning today in the Venezuela hearing? That was God, I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. Elliot Abrams. If you have a chance to watch the video of her questioning of him today, she's definitely someone not to be messed with. She's got a good head on her shoulders, and she's definitely going to fight for what she feels is right. So we'll keep an eye out for her. Unfortunately, we always have to keep an eye out with what's going on in the Trump administration. Biggest news coming out today, Paul Manafort had his plea deal voided by the judge due to him lying during parts of the investigation. The judge stated that he intentionally lied to special counsel Robert Mueller's office, made multiple false statements to the FBI, the OSC, and the grand jury concerning matters that were material to the investigation. So this does not void his guilty pleas, but it does now open up for Mueller's team to really not be bound by the sentencing terms of the plea deal. What do you think is going to happen to Mr. Manafort now, Brian?
I think he's going to look at some jail time. And I also think that whatever is sentenced to him, I believe that you're looking at Trump will pardon him.
You do. You think that Trump's willing to push aside more of his support by pardoning a convicted criminal?
What? Once again, it is you are looking at Trump sitting there denying that this is that Manafort did anything wrong. He will say that this is an investigation, that this is presidential harassment, that they are that Mueller and his team are going after just about anyone, that there's no truth to the facts being held against him, and that he's going to pardon him. And ultimately, I don't think Trump's base cares about Manafort.
All right.
I don't think the people that are going to vote for Donald Trump are going to sit there and say, you know what, you had my vote until you pardoned Paul Manafort.
You would think, though, it does make it tougher and tougher for, senators, congressmen, congresspeople in the GOP to continue to back him when he flouts the rules of law so flagrantly in front of everybody.
100% don't think Trump cares.
No, I don't think he cares either, but I think actions like that will continue to make the GOP's lives harder, just like it did with the government shutdown, which it would appear we're going to have a resolution that Trump will begrudgingly sign unless Ann Coulter or Sean Hannity can talk him out of it in the next 24 hours. But this would be a plan that would fund the government through September at this point, and would only give him about $1.3 billion towards his wall, which he initially wanted 5.7. Initially was offered 1.5. Now he doesn't get anything near what he wanted and less than what was offered initially. So basically, the 35-day shutdown was a complete waste as far as from the Trump perspective for the wall.
Yes. And what's funny is that Trump was quoted as saying today that he doesn't want another wall because it's a terrible thing.
So what pains me the most is seeing some of the numbers that are still coming in as far as the financial impact on government workers, excuse me, during this shutdown. I was reading an article today that out of all the government workers that were impacted by the shutdown, 62% of those went through all of their savings or most of their savings. 45% of them took on additional debt due to it. 25% of them needed to dip into their retirement savings, and 25% of them needed to visit food banks. So a horrible impact on individual lives and also on the economy. Hopefully this resolution does get signed by the end of the month, or excuse me, by the end of the week to keep things going.
And yet all of that seemed perfectly acceptable by both sides in the debate, the Republicans and the Democrats. All of that stuff was going on, and it wasn't until the air traffic controllers called out sick en masse, shutting down airports, that this thing came to an end.
Yeah, so thankfully they made a move, a power move, that got things rolling again. But yeah, so again, hopefully we'll get things signed. Speaking of debt, you wanted to touch on this article you saw on BuzzFeed regarding student loan debt.
Yes, student loan. If you maybe we'll put up a link on our Twitter page. If you have a few minutes and you would like to get schooled and educated, pardon the pun, on the effect that the current $1.5 trillion with a T, we just shut down the government over $5 billion. This is something that we're talking trillions. The collective U.S. Debt from college student loans is $1.5 trillion. The effect that this is having on the U.S. economy, that you have got a generation, whether we call them millennials, and no matter what we like to joke about them over their pretentious coffee shops, overly tight pants, and ridiculous mustaches, whatever you want to say about them, but the it is literally, we are creating a two-tiered strata amongst this generation in terms of the people that are bogged down by student debt and those that are not. You've got a generation of people that are holding off on starting families because they cannot afford it, because too much of their paycheck goes towards their student debt. They are holding off on buying homes. They're holding off on contributing money into the general economy because their money is all going towards financial institutions that advance them student loans at very high interest rates. I'm sure that Representative Omar would have a lot to say about these financial institutions and the people that really run them based on those high interest rates. I thought I was going to get a reaction out of you, Ron, but apparently you're not listening.
Sorry.
That's all right. But really a fascinating read. And, you know, one of the things that it brought to back to mind was just how during the 2008 economic slowdown, there was a real push for people who were suddenly found themselves out of work or underemployed, as I like to call it, where they were told, go get a master's degree, go back to school, take some classes, because this is going to show that you weren't just sitting at home staring off into space, but you were trying to be productive. So you had these people who had a job, found themselves out of a job, took on tens of thousands of dollars in debt in the hopes that they were going to show that they are productive people, only to find that the jobs that they were being offered when the economy started to rebound were not paying anywhere near enough to allow them to pay off this heavy debt burden.
Well, I would say,
and they're fucked.
Yeah,
they're just fucked, because this is the only type of debt that does not get washed away when you file for bankruptcy. Now I know I'm paranoid. I know I'm conspiratorial, but what does that say about the lobbyists and the power that these lobbyists have that you can wipe away credit card debt, you can wipe away personal loans, but somehow student loans just last forever. I think it's a terrible thing. Don't have a solution. Just like to point out another problem.
Well, and again, you know, you have someone who, you know, whose family was involved in making money off of student loans, who's now, you know, our Secretary of Education. And is now being sued because she was supposed to forgive $150 million of student loan debt. But, you know, she ended up having to be sued because she didn't want to do that.
Right.
You know, I think one of the best things, you know, I did as a young man was go to a state school and mm-hmm. live at home. So I had relatively little student loan debt by the time I got out. So I was able to pay that off within, you know, probably the first, you know, 4 or 5 years of getting out of college. You know, I have friends that I went to high school with that are still paying off their student loan debt. And we've been out of school, what, 25, 26 years now. So it's a burden that gets tied around people's necks. The cost of especially for-profit colleges and universities is ridiculous. And yeah, we're in an economy these days where, you know, you aren't necessarily going to find a job that's going to allow you a living wage, much less the ability to live and pay down this debt, which like you said, you can't get rid of it. You can't go through bankruptcy. You can't, you know, the best you can hope for is to try and refinance it. And even, I don't know if any of the banks up by you do this, you know, we have a TD Bank down here that does commercials, you know, kind of saying like, hey, are you trapped in student loan debt and you can't get a house, you can't go on vacation? You know, they're basically saying like, hey, you're pretty much screwed because you have a student loan, but come to us. We'll try and refinance that loan and free up some of your cash for you, but still charge you interest on that loan.
Of course.
It's a messed up situation.
Correct. That's all I had on it. Okay. We'll put out the a link on the Twitter page. You can find this at Ron Bryan Podcast over there on Twitter. We'll tweet out the link. Really an interesting read.
We did. You mentioned to me before the show, we did lose one of our great perennial presidential candidates of all time passed away. Lyndon LaRouche, dead at the age of 96, ran for president 8 times. And I know near and dear to your heart, was also a conspiracy theorist.
Absolutely. Railed against the Eastern establishment, environmentalists, Queen Elizabeth, allegedly plotted to have him killed. He felt that Jews had founded the Ku Klux Klan, described Native Americans as lower beasts. Yet at the same time, he was able to develop alliances with farmers, Nation of Islam, Teamsters, abortion opponents, and Representative Omar of the House of Representatives.
Well, let's not forget, he also once called for all AIDS victims to be quarantined, referred to Zionism as, quote, cult nonsense, and said that the Holocaust was mythical.
And this man almost ran for president. Well, no, he did run, but he never really got particularly close. Died at 96, one of the only presidential candidates to run from a prison cell.
Really? Well, he did do a time in what? He was convicted for mail fraud? Because I remember he took loans from his supporters that he never paid back.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you do what you got to do. I think, you know, we were just talking about the student loan debt. Mr. LaRouche, all he was trying to do was become president.
He found a creative way to finance that. Maybe,
of course.
Maybe our entrepreneurial college students out there need to follow in his path.
He didn't have Deutsche Bank that was openly lending him Russian money.
Allegedly.
Mm-hmm. What else we got?
I think that's about it for the week. You know, we were thinking about talking about that Esquire cover, but I think that's been covered. It's again, very tone deaf to throw out the suffering of a, you know, white teenager from middle America during Black History Month. And the article was quite boring. I read the article. I was like, all right, maybe, you know, I don't want to judge. Don't judge a book or a magazine by its cover. Let me read the article. And like, it's really just about this kid who has, for the most part, a decent life. Lives with his mom. He's got a good relationship with his dad, even though his parents are divorced. going to high school, has a girlfriend. Like, life is good. So,
right.
You know, his whole thing is, I just don't know what I can do, what I can, what I can't do. I'm so confused. Well, you're a fucking teenager, kid. None of us had a fucking clue what to do when we were a teenager. So this is nothing new. So, but again, who the hell reads Esquire? Well, I know you do because you're a man of means.
Well, not only that, but I like to know exactly the style that I should be wrapping my scarf around my neck. You know, sometimes I do the loop. Sometimes it's just, you know, wrapped twice around my neck. I need Esquire to tell me how to dress like a man.
Regardless, you're always looking good.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining in again. Make sure you visit the Facebook page to vote on This Week in Racism. Head to the Twitter page. We'll be posting some of our articles there. And, of course, don't forget we're on Instagram as well. So listen, download, rate, subscribe. Let your friends know. And, again, we love hearing from you. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Brian, anything else before we get out of here?
Love you, buddy. Look forward to doing this again.
All right. Love you, too. We are on our way out.